That's right, Inception sucks. Here we go. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 121. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
And sorry about the 2 weeks sudden, the sudden lack of episodes for 2 weeks, because like 3 days before we were going to record, I suddenly got the chance to go to Comic-Con, and I couldn't turn that down.
That's like, you got to understand, listeners, that is like Batman, like, not having anything to do, and all of a sudden, it's the Bat symbol, and then he just takes off, and the Batmobile takes off, and I'm like, yeah, of course, Dave has to go to Comic-Con, so.
Wow, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Wow.
To the Batmobile. No.
And I like how you go to the Adam West version of it, too.
Isn't that sad? Well, I can't really do the Danny Elfman theme, so.
Okay.
Or the, who did the Joel Schumacher one? Was it Alan Silvestri?
Nipples on the bat suit.
Hans Zimmer was like, bwah, bwah, bwah.
Yeah, you can tell we've missed doing this. And that's half the audience stopping listening to the episode right there. Wow. All right, well, let's go ahead and talk about what we've watched over the past couple weeks. Ethan, why don't you kick us off, sir?
Okay, I watched The Hours. To quote Liz Lemon, they should have called it The Weeks.
No argument here.
There's a reason I skipped that one, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie, but it's, yeah.
I like Ed Harris in that movie.
You liked who in that movie?
Ed Harris.
Oh, yeah, he was, Julianne Moore's good in it, too, and yeah. Jeff Daniels, I enjoy seeing him every once in a while, in person and in the films, but, yeah. Next, I watched Valhalla Rising. Now, I need to give a bit of a prelude to this. Last year at the Toronto Film Festival, I needed a movie that me and my mom we could see on a Sunday to fill a slot, and I was looking at the movies playing, and I saw this movie playing, and I knew it was from the director Nicholas Winding Refn, who's very acclaimed. He directed Bronson and the Pusher trilogy.
Yeah.
And I noticed it was also a Viking movie, but I was like, it'll be really artistic and interesting, and so I said, let's get tickets for it. So we go to see it, and I should say my mom is not a fan of the violent motion pictures. Now, one of the first scenes in this film is a guy getting his head bashed in with a rock. Then there's a guy having his stomach cut open and all his guts piling out. So,
I
wasn't really able to enjoy this movie, and so I said to my mom, do you want to leave? And she was like, yeah. So we booted it out of there. But so after seeing some very good reviews for this film, though, I decided, you know what, I should probably watch it outside of that setting. So I did, and it's a good movie.
I want to see it.
Have you guys heard of it?
I have not heard of it. Marty called me the other night raving about the Pusher trilogy. He saw that. He's like, Barry, you have to see the Pusher trilogy. But no, I've not heard of Valhalla Rising, but I will see it.
So anyway, Valhalla Rising is about this Viking named One Eye who's like captured, not captured, at the beginning he's kind of imprisoned, and eventually he breaks out of this imprisonment and goes on this kind of spiritual quest with these other Vikings, and there's lots of beheadings and stuff and interesting electronic rock music and awesome cinematography. It doesn't have a great plot, I guess, but it's a pretty interesting tone poem of a film, so I'd recommend it.
Cool. Yeah.
Next, I finally got around to seeing Jennifer's Body.
Why?
Well, I'd wanted to see it when it came out, and I'm a Diablo Cody defender, so I was like, yeah, I'll just finally get around to watching it. And while I didn't mind it, it was definitely a mixed bag of a movie. Like, I liked a lot of the performances. Like, I thought Amanda Hug and Kiss was good in it, and I like J.K. Simmons and Seth Cohen and the guy who played the boyfriend. But just the movie is kind of tonally, it's not – it's not where it needs to be. The kind of the climax is pretty lame. It's kind of forgettable, but I didn't mind it. So I guess that puts me amongst one of the bigger fans of the movie.
Didn't completely suck. That's a rousing endorsement.
Yeah, no argument here, Ethan. Yeah, not scary, not funny, just kind of in between.
I laughed out loud a few times, but, you know.
Were you supposed to, though?
Yeah, like, okay. When she said that PMS was a, what was it? It was like a, there's a PMS joke that made me laugh, but I can't remember what it was. What was it, Barry?
I don't remember. I saw it once.
You'll survive, sir.
I do remember, you're talking about the climax. I remember Megan Fox with her awful floating special effects. Like it reminded
actually,
me of
I kinda like I kind of like that, actually. That really? It was like wearing its fakeness on its sleeve. I sort of admired that in a way.
It reminded me of the climax of the movie Buffy the Vampire Slayer, just how lame that was.
Yeah. This one doesn't have Paul Reubens, though, so
nope, does not.
That movie's got to be. Next, I watched this film called Dogtooth. Have you guys heard of it?
Yes, I've heard of that one.
I have not.
Looked interesting.
Dogtooth is this Greek film about these two parents who basically have kept their children confined from the world, and they teach them, like, pretty effed up things, like words mean other things. Like, for example, phone, like salt means phone or phone means salt, or like they're taught to believe that airplanes like fall from the sky and stuff, and all these bizarre things. And I can't even describe the movie from now on. It's like so strange and so disturbing. Like I watched it like starting at midnight last night, and it gave me nightmares. So that's the only way I can describe this movie. It is so crazy.
It's nightmare inducing.
I've heard it's like a homeschool horror movie.
Pretty much. It's not even like an outright horror movie. It's just so unsettling. Like it sounds probably like ridiculous me describing it, but I it's something I can really only say just watch it. So, okay. Yeah. And I guess there's one last thing I should mention. This isn't a movie, but last night I saw the play Rock of Ages.
Who's the author? Do you remember?
It's well, there's no one you'd know in it, but it's like a play for all set to hair metal music, and it was definitely worth the $105 for the ticket. I can say that for sure.
Really? Dang.
No.
Okay.
See, here's the thing about I understand the appeal of the stage, but like $105 for a ticket, like by that logic, like Inception, for example, a ticket for Inception costs $10. By that logic, shouldn't you get 10 times the experience that you got from Inception from watching this play?
Was there anybody else in the audience enjoying it at a level of $105?
Okay, this is where it gets good though. There was a woman sitting in front of me who bore a strong resemblance to Catherine Bigelow, so she was a very attractive older woman. And this was like clearly the highlight of her life, going to this play. She was like, the entire every time a song she came on, like whether it was like a Whitesnake song or something, she'd be like, oh, and she was just like orgasming about and just like dancing and stuff, and
sounds like the fourth show you got in front of you was better than the
show. She had this cackle of a laugh. And like even things that weren't jokes, like when this one guy says, you kind of have a Molly Ringwald look to her. She went, and clapped her hands. And it was just like, oh, so worth the money just for that.
You got a special floor show as a bonus. So you didn't get that in Inception.
No.
Actually, we got the floor show after it, but that's a whole other story.
And I'll conclude my thoughts on this one thing. There really needs to be a moratorium put on Don't Stop Believing. I'm sorry.
We've hit the point. I can agree with that. We've kind of hit the overload point.
I suffered through the pilot of Glee the other day. Sorry, I'm not a fan.
It's okay.
Hearing them do it too, I'm just like, yeah, I totally agree. I've had enough of that song. The journey is over for me.
I see what you did there.
I totally see what you did there. Oh, yeah.
Yay, we still got that sound effect.
Oh, yes, we do. Oh, we've got so
Ethan,
many
do
guys.
You partake in the theater usually? I mean, are you a theater connoisseur? Do you like to go to the plays a lot, or?
Not really. Like, I can understand the appeal, but I'd rather watch a movie.
Okay. Yeah, I'm the same way. Just curious.
Yeah, like, Avenue Q was fun. Wicked was fun, but, you know, like...
And I want to see Point Break Live one day, but...
Marty was in Point Break Live. He actually got to play He got to play the Johnny Utah character. They picked him out from the audience.
Nice!
Yeah, and for the listeners, if you don't know what this is, Point Break Live, I think they still do it in L.A. What it is they pick out someone from the audience, basically just at random. Marty got picked, and what it is, they do literally a stage production of Point Break, and it's as good as it sounds. But what they do, for anybody who plays Johnny Utah, just to make sure he is as wooden as possible, they have all of his lines on cue cards that make it very hard to read. So the readings that Marty gave, like as Johnny Utah, were purposely stilted and weird and awkward. And Marty, you know, just with his long hair, looked like kind of like a Keanu Reeves character anyway. So, I mean, he sent me pictures of him with the cast, and I actually have a DVD video of him playing the play. Anyway, yeah, see Point Break Live if you can.
So can we get, like, his... I am an FBI agent as like a show outro or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I could totally pull stuff off of that.
Yeah, I'll have to bring that over. That's good stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I have to see that just because, wow. All right, then. all right, wow. We went to Point Break Live. Well done. Point Break Barry, Live. What about you, sir? What have you been watching?
Some good stuff. Some good and not so good. I saw Clint Eastwood's White Hunter Black Heart, which I've always wanted to revisit. This is the film where it's a fictionalized version of the making of the African Queen. Clint Eastwood plays John Huston. What's good about this movie is it's very exotic in its locations, very intelligent movie, very interesting character piece. It's basically about how John Huston wanted to go out and shoot an elephant as opposed to make the movie. It's a fictionalized version, by the way. What's disappointing about the movie is there are no scenes of the filming of the African Queen. You've got actors and actresses playing Humphrey Bogart, Lauren Bacall, and Katharine Hepburn, but they don't actually show like the making of the movie. And Clint Eastwood, his impression, he does a feature-length John Huston impression. It's a real mixed bag. He's doing the Huston voice, and he's clearly playing the Huston character. This is one of these movies I wish he had done later on. It feels like it was a little too ambitious for him in 1990. I also took a look at Roland Emmerich's 2012, which was definitely as bad as I heard. I got to say, like, it's interesting because it's boring, 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 and I'm not someone who gets bored by movies, but it's boring as heck for about an hour, and then once the world starts to literally fall apart, it does so in such a wonderfully ridiculous way. When John Cusack is driving down, like, Hollywood Boulevard, and, like, there's a huge donut that barely hits his car, and he's always, like, one step ahead of every single huge disaster. I got to say, it's a terrible movie that I thoroughly enjoyed watching.
Were you waiting
watching.
For Peter Fonda to go surfing down Wilshire Boulevard?
That would not have been out of place. And honestly, it is that absurd and ridiculous.
I don't know what was my favorite part of that movie. The part where the fat Russian guy tosses his two fat kids. Or the part where a guy tried to get some action in the theater and was loudly rejected.
All the scenes with that stupid dog. Cause I love it when Emmerich and the other guy, sorry, Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin, whenever they do these awful disaster movies, and they always have a scene like no matter that we've watched like thousands of people perish in flames. There's always this moment where like the dog is about to eat it, and it's always manipulating the audience to go no, not the dog. And there's
people,
that but not Fluffy. Yeah, there's a moment in 2012 where they do that, and it's so shameless and stupid. But I gotta say, I appreciated seeing it there, that they actually found a way to include it in this idiotic movie. But yeah, I wish all bad movies that were that much fun. I saw The Girl Who Played with Fire. Definitely not as good as The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Okay. It's a more explicit movie. It's actually more violent. It actually has more action than the first one, but for some reason I just really felt the characters were lost.
Well, they changed directors and put it on a rushed shooting schedule.
And it shows. Lisbeth and the reporter have no scenes together in this movie. And that's the point of the first one, that these two need each other.
Yeah.
And with the sequel, and even at the end of the sequel, it's like, okay, these two characters still clearly need each other, but they have no scenes together in this movie, and I was really disappointed by that. Not a bad movie, but nowhere near as good as the original. I took a look at Russ Meyer's Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. I finally managed to get a copy of that. If film connoisseurs, if you're able to track a copy of this down, do. It's wonderful. It's kind of like Death Proof without Stuntman Mike, but that's still a high recommendation. I love Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. A movie that the Wild 105.5 crew on Maui recommended that I'm so glad I finally made time to see, Black Dynamite. Black Dynamite.
That's in my Netflix queue.
With Michael Jai White, you will not regret this. This would have been perfect with the Grindhouse double feature experience. Black Dynamite is wonderful. I like it better than I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. I liked it better than Undercover Brother. I mean, it's that good. It is uncanny how much it looks and feels like blaxploitation, the real thing, but it's such a wonderful comedy. I love that film. Loved it. Michael Winterbottom's The Killer Inside Me. This is the serial killer period piece with Casey Affleck, the first movie he's done since Gone Baby Gone. It also has Jessica Alba and Kate Hudson in the cast. This is a movie where there were a lot of walkouts at the Sundance Film Festival for its violence, and I completely understand why. The movie's violence is, I gotta say, pretty impressively hideous. I don't like Michael Winterbottom's movies, and this does not change that. I just feel like a real great director could have really done something with this pulpy material, and I really feel like he was the wrong guy to do this. It's worth seeing for Affleck's performance. Once again, he's just this wonderful, underrated surprise of an actor, but I didn't think the film was particularly good. Went back and looked at, speaking of serial killer movies, American Psycho.
Nice.
And I gotta say, every time I see this movie, I see so much more there. The first time I saw it 10 years ago, I was really kind of repulsed by the violence. The second time I saw it was with Julia, who was laughing almost the whole time. Like, I didn't realize that it's really a comedy, and a really great black comedy about the 80s. And seeing it again just recently now with the 10th anniversary, I got to say that this film just continues to impress me, and Bale's performance continues just to impress me. It's like this miracle of modern performances. He's just fearless in that role and fearless in that movie. I love his work in that. Let's see. Yeah, I saw a lot of movies. I want to wrap it up because I don't want to take too much more time. I think the last one...
This is already going to be an epically long episode, so
I know.
Fun.
Well, I don't want to waste too much time. Sam Raimi's The Gift I've looked at again, which I've always liked. I think it's a really underrated film that he did. Best performance Keanu Reeves has ever given, but really great ensemble cast by everybody involved. Angelina Jolie and Salt. I like this movie a lot. I think it's a lot of fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Because the marketing just annoyed the crap out of me.
The trailer was not very good, and I got to say the poster isn't anything special either. But the movie's really exciting. I really enjoyed this movie. I think it's certainly up there with the A-Team. It's completely ridiculous, but so, so much fun. That'd be a good double feature, actually, when I think of it.
Wow, okay.
I'll end with this one. Anthony Hopkins made a film called Slipstream. This is a film that he wrote, directed, and even did the score for, and he stars in this film. It's essentially about a filmmaker and how the fictitious characters in his movies start to come out in real life. It also stars John Turturro, Cameron Manheim, and Christian Slater, and Jeffrey Tambor. It is completely self-indulgent. It is completely incoherent. The way it's been edited almost like an Oliver Stone flashback fever dream edited by Michael Bay. It is,
wow.
And that's generously putting it. It's so incomprehensible. And it was frustrating to watch because you could see the talent at hand. You could see that Anthony Hopkins is really trying to do something. But I can't recommend the film, and I can't say there's anything about the movie I particularly liked other than the fact that he was trying to do something really different and really not audience-friendly, but at the same time, I think he makes a movie that alienates everybody but himself. So that's it for me.
All right, then. I'll wrap it up. I'm going to get the crap out of the way first. Finished Sanctuary Season 2 this weekend, and the season finale made me a little sick. It was so bad. Including a Bollywood dance number out of nowhere that just was so awkward.
Wow.
Jai Ho! Do, 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 do.
It made Jai Ho look legit. I'll put it that way. The storyline is just so ridiculous. It's just so dumb. I mean, we'll check out season 3 just because, Steph enjoys it, and so maybe she's seen things in shows and stuff that I haven't seen before. So I'm like, all right, I'm gonna keep going with it, and we'll see. But that was not a high note to end on.
Hmm. Wow.
I don't even want to spoil it. It just was really weird. Let's see here. Do the movie that pleasantly surprised me. I put the review up a couple weeks ago. Nicolas Cage in The Sorcerer's Apprentice. It's not gonna. It's a fun summer movie. That's really all I need to know.
You sound hesitant. You got excited, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to hold back. It's not
just
that great.
So much. It's just a fun, fun movie.
And you've seen it twice now, yeah?
I have. I took Steph to see it yesterday because we wanted to see something just kind of fun and light for an early matinee. So we saw that, and she had a good time with it too. And Alfred Molina just does the mustache-twirling villain in such a glorious way.
Yeah.
He's so much fun to watch on screen. This is Nicolas Cage in a big Hollywood movie, and he didn't suck out loud. Made me very happy. So, yeah. that's really all you need to say about it. It's a fun time. You know, it's really a family-friendly film overall. I mean, it's not that bloody at all. It's not that scary, but it's a fun time.
Okay.
Back to TV. Wow, Futurama is getting better every single week. I don't want to ruin anything for anyone who hasn't seen it, but they're definitely hitting their stride again and improving on what they did before. They're kind of getting away from the Family Guy humor a bit, which I really appreciated. There's really intelligent story writing. This week's episode was about time travel, and it's freaking hilarious how they... I will just say the professor makes a time forward machine. You can't go back in time. You can only go forward in time.
Hmm.
They're supposed to be gone for 1 minute, come back in the year 3010. They end up in the year 10,000 and keep skipping forward to try to find someone who's made a machine that goes back in time. And it's
cool.
Hilarious. Like, the way that they get out of paradoxes and stuff, it's brilliant. It's just such a good show. It's why it's one of my favorite shows on TV. Leverage is back, and it's just so much fun as well. There's a lot more character development with the supporting cast, and the heists are still a blast. You just can't help but have a good time watching this show. It's just so much fun. And I'm not saying that just because I went to the panel at Comic-Con, which we'll talk about later.
Yes.
And, you know, let's just wrap it up with Inception, because I know this is something we were all looking forward to talking about before I had to flee the state. Ethan, I'm really curious to see what you thought of Inception first.
Well, the thing is, at this point in time, the movie has been pretty much discussed to death on the internet, so I don't really know what I can say that has not been said a million times before. But I will say this one thing, which I think will make you guys very happy. When the movie ended, one of the first thoughts that entered my head was, man, Avatar kind of sucked.
Wow. Okay, so what made this happen? Just how good the story was?
Just how good everything was.
Fair enough. I said that, you know, we got a floor show after Inception was over, watching people go, that was confusing. It's like, so you weren't paying attention at all to the movie, because this was not a confusing movie, I don't think.
It's a little. Like, I definitely had at points to remind myself, okay, you do this, which does that, because if you don't, this happens, which means that happens, because if you do this, then this happens. Like,
You have to think through it, which I appreciate, but it wasn't the kind of movie that left out half the storyline for you to try to figure out.
Yeah.
Barry's just sitting there smiling.
Overrated. I prefer Russell Crowe in green tights. No.
Needed more smoke machines and a little more smoke machines and James Horner scores for
exactly,
you.
Exactly. the second time I saw it, I saw it on IMAX, which is, by the way, the only way to see this movie. I mean, it's just incredible on IMAX. It's a smoother ride. And it's wonderful because when you go in a second time, the opening scene, it's like, okay, you get everything. Everything completely clicks. You know the rules of what's going on. You understand the logic of the plan, the mission of what's going on with the Ken Watanabe scenes. And there's so much to take in. And I even wrote this in my review. Like, I don't even care if there are plot holes. This movie just is so wonderful that I could care less if parts of it don't make any sense. Of course it doesn't make any sense. It's a completely ridiculous concept. But the logic of it does seem to be so incredibly sound. The second time I saw it, not only is it a smoother ride, but there are so many things to focus on that you miss the first time. Like, one thing I missed the first time out is just how good Cillian Murphy is in this movie.
Yeah.
His performance is incredibly heartfelt. His character is really heartfelt. I think the one negative thing I wrote in my review of the film, and I really had to really think hard to come up with something negative, was just the inevitable comparison to The Dark Knight. There aren't any performances in this movie like Heath Ledger's performance. This is really an ensemble piece, and everybody is pretty low-key for the most part, even DiCaprio, even though his character and his performance has the emotional arc of the film, if you could say that, depending on how you look at his character and what he's going through. But no, having seen the film twice now, I think this is one of these movies that is going to get better and better every time you see it. I don't know if it's going to make more or less sense. And frankly, again, I really don't care. I think it's just such a rich experience and such a wonderful... This movie towers over everything else that's come out this year.
It was way good. I have my definite feelings as to what's happened in the movie, and it's different from what a lot of people have even said. But even if everyone else's theories are right, I don't care. It's still a good movie.
Yeah.
That's the true sign of a good movie. You know, even if the ending is different than my interpretation, I loved it.
I was going to say, what was your audience's reaction during the ending? Mine was like, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. been clapping, and so
everyone in ours went, oh.
There was that when I saw it at a the previous screening you and I were at. That's right. There was awe and then clapping, and then as people walked out, I heard people go, "Confusing! I don't get it."
That's what I was talking about. The floor show. That one guy's like, "It's just so confusing." I'm like, "Dude, freaking open your eyes during a movie, then." Do we want to talk about our individual ideas of it in spoilers?
Before we do that, I just want to mention I'm very happy, though, with how well this movie is doing at the box office.
Yes, it gives me a little bit of faith in the American movie going public.
Yeah.
At least until the next, whatever Seltzer Freeberg movie makes $100 million.
I don't know if it's going to make as much money as Iron Man 2, but I think it looks like it'll at least do over $200 million, which I'm glad.
Yeah. It earns every bit of it. So we want to spend like 2 minutes talking spoilers?
Okay.
I don't think we need more than 2 minutes, because like you said, there's so many different theories flying around and everything. Let's go ahead and do it in... Oh, goodness, let me mark it so that people are going to be able to... We're going to do two minutes, and then you can just come back, and we'll come up with some ridiculous spoiler so you'll know that we're back. And we'll do that in 3, 2, 1... Yeah, so when DiCaprio started singing "When My Heart Goes On," it was just crazy. Sorry. So what was your, how did you feel how the film ended? Do you think he was in the real world, Ethan?
Well, to me, there was kind of a red herring early in the movie. You know that scene in Mombasa, the chase scene?
Yeah.
When he's running and there's like those two enclosed spaces?
Yes.
Like that almost seemed like such a dream imagery. I'm like, is he dreaming right now or something?
Exactly.
To me, that was the kind of the warning bell. So, yeah, I think the entire thing was a dream.
Yeah, exactly. And then Ken Watanabe pulls up just conveniently like that and saves him. I totally agree.
We saw the real world in the movie at all whatsoever.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think the whole thing, I think at this point, DiCaprio's character is so deep, far down into this rabbit hole that I don't think we ever saw the real world.
I kind of think he was being incepted himself the entire time, but
that's interesting.
I don't know.
You had the part, there's a part where Watanabe, I think it is, explicitly comes out and starts talking about how, don't you think it's weird that you're always being chased by some faceless person or a huge nameless corporation? Which just was my first tip off. And then when Mal died, when she killed herself, there's too much inconsistency in the way they shot that. It looked like the ledges were about 2 feet apart.
Julia's theory was that Mal was the only sane character in the entire movie, and that DiCaprio's character is actually in a coma.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this whole thing is basically, her trying to get at him while he's in a coma.
Yeah. So essentially, he's never left the real world. She's in the real world with the kids. He's in the dream world with the kids, which is kind of tragic, but still really, really flipping cool.
The last scene, no matter how you look at it, just always gets me choked up, because no matter what it is, if it's real or not, it's what DiCaprio's character wants so badly. It's what he wants more than anything, and it's the one thing he cannot get, but again, depending on how you look at the ending.
Yep, and we are just at our 2-minute mark. So when Neo showed up at the end, it was just the weirdest thing ever. I don't know.
And when Ellen Page at the end said her character was Autumn to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, that blew my mind.
Well played, sir. Well played. All right, shall we move on to what's hit theaters this past weekend?
Yes, in theaters this week, you've got the new film from Jay Roach, the director of Little Fockers. So you know it's going to be great. Dinner for Schmucks, the remake of The Dinner Game, starring Steve Carell and Paul Rudd. Charlie St. Cloud, or Ghost for Idiots, I guess. Zac Efron.
Looks like Zac Efron's Remember Me.
Ooh. I heard he was actually good and decent in it. It's just the movie sucked.
That's what I keep reading, too. Efron good, movie bad.
Efron good, movie bad.
Caveman review. Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore.
We need to start doing caveman reviews, I think.
We should.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, new segment. I don't know why they did a sequel to Cats and Dogs, but there it is. And no one from the original is in it. There's no Elizabeth. Seriously, there's no Jeff Goldblum. There's no Tobey Maguire. It's all new people, all new cats, all new dogs.
This came out. The original came out like 10 years ago.
10 years ago, yeah.
Was this like a rights thing where it's like how they're making a Ghostwriter 2 because they just can't let the rights expire? Is that why they made this?
I can see people clamoring for another Cats and Dogs.
Yeah, this could have gone straight to DVD or straight to the Disney Channel, for Pete's sake. We don't need this.
We might as well get another Baby Geniuses movie at this point.
yeah, another baby geniuses. Look who's talking.
Five or whatever it is now.
Yeah, it would be a full. I think it would be the fourth one. I don't know. I lost count. In limited release, The Concert, which is supposed to be excellent. Such a good movie, I've heard. It actually played at the Maui Film Festival. The Extra Man, starring Kevin Kline, supposed to have an awesome performance by Paul Dano, Dano in the supporting role. A film I'm dying to see. Julia got to see this at a sneak preview back in April. The stinker, and I've been dying to see this movie, Get Low, with Robert Duvall and Bill Murray. It's supposed to be a great movie. I'm dying to see it.
We saw the poster for that at Rec 2, and that looked really interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it looks like a very good film. Joel Schumacher's new film, and showing a limited release with Chase Crawford, Emma Roberts, and 50 Cent, called 12.
So many good actors, yes. Right there.
Yeah. Gold Joel.
All right.
And then also the documentary Hugh Hefner, Playboy, Activist, and Rebel.
Wow. All right, then. Let's go ahead and talk about DVDs, then.
DVDs. Wow. All right. Coming out the week of August the 3rd, the instant cult movie classic, as I'm sure it will be very soon, Kick-Ass, the Matthew Vaughn film. Diary of a Wimpy Kid, one of the most disappointing films of the year because it's based on one of my favorite books, real letdown of a film. One of the winners of this movie, everybody needs to see this, Roman Polanski's The Ghost Rider with Hugh McGregor and Pierce Brosnan. Great film.
That's writer.
The Ghost Writer. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. The Ghost Writer. Not to be confused with The Ghost Writer. Sorry. Ghost Writer. Thank you, Dave. Heroes, season 4.
Thank God it's over.
That's it.
We're done.
All right. Nail in the coffin. Available on Blu-ray, you've got John Carpenter's Escape from New York. You know you want it.
I hope it has more extras, like the extras from the 2 DVD as opposed to Escape from L.A., which had like the trailer.
I know. It breaks my heart. We need a commentary for Escape from L.A.
Absolutely.
Please, Carpenter and Russell, do it. John Hughes' The Breakfast Club, which has the immortal line, "What are you having for lunch, Bender? You're wearing it." Love that. Sam Mendes' first film after American Beauty, Road to Perdition, with Tom Cruise. Shame on me. Tom Hanks. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I like Road to Perdition.
Because they look close. They look alike. You know?
They're nothing alike. Joe Dante's Piranha. Available from the
Roger Corman Classics collection.
Man, I'm falling apart today. The Roger Corman Classics.
We're recording
collection.
A bit early today.
Yeah,
so
that's
yeah.
That's why. That's totally. Exactly why. I like Piranha. Have you seen Piranha?
I haven't. I need to see it, and I can't wait for Piranha 3D.
John Sayles wrote the screenplay, and there's actually a line in it where who is it? It's Miller, Dick Miller. He's the owner of of this fancy resort, and one of his co-workers comes up to him and is like, "Sir, I need your attention." Dick Miller's like, "Not now." And the guy goes, "Sir, the fish are eating the guests, sir." That's actually a line from the movie.
Nice.
McGee's Charlie's Angels, which I just saw again recently. It's all right.
Again, fun popcorn movie.
It's fun. It's better as an action movie than as a comedy. As a comedy, it's a little too self-satisfied.
Wait, who's in it again?
Oh, yes.
Bill Murray.
No. The Chad.
Oh, the Chad. That's right. Canada's own Tom Green.
Yay.
As the Chad. I like Crispin Glover in the movie. I'll go that far.
Yeah.
Crispin Glover's
creepy,
sweet.
Creepy thin hair man.
Yeah. Yeah. He steals that film. One of the best baseball movies, if not the best baseball movie ever, I think this is a pretty good argument. Bull Durham, Ron Shelton's film with Kevin Costner and Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon. I love Bull Durham. It's a great film. California, one of the early Brad Pitt films. He stars in the movie with his then squeeze, Julia Louis. This is the 90s, folks. It also stars David Duchovny. Interesting film. Not great. This is Dominic Sena before he went and sold his soul and made those cheeseball action movies. But it's
wow.
It's yeah. Well, he went on and made Gone in 60 Seconds and Whiteout.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's not the greatest. But okay. Yeah, California's interesting. Good performances. Dave, man, you got angry when I mentioned this one. James and the Giant Peach. You do not like this movie.
I saw it in the theater and it just annoyed the piss out of me.
Like
I don't know why.
Richard Dreyfuss and
I was just sitting there just like, this is the dumbest movie. I don't know why. Maybe I need to revisit it, but I have such bad memories. It's not quite Benji the Hunted bad memories, but
why are you picking on Benji the Hunted? I love Benji the Hunted.
Oh, Benji the Hunted is a
it's a
pile
fun movie.
Of crap.
He's got to save the little cubs.
Where he
from
runs
evil
down
wolf.
The same section of path 50 times, and I noticed this as an 8-year-old child.
Well, you know, they only have so much dog footage, so, you know, they got to put that in a loop. I love that movie.
That was
Joe Camp's Benji the Hunted. Everybody needs to see that.
No, they don't. God, no, they don't. I will watch James the Giant Peach again before I watch Benji the Hunted.
All right,
easily.
Well, there you go. And then, yay, my plan worked. Then our crap title of the week. Man, this is a stinker. This came out in 1987. It's called The All-Nighter. This is actually getting a DVD release. Have you seen this one, Ethan?
What is this?
The All-Nighter with Susanna Hoffs.
Who the hell is that?
Well,
I'm take that as a no.
There you go. Susanna Hoffs is the lead singer of the Bangles. The Bangles being
wow.
Walk Like an Egyptian, Manic Monday, Eternal Flame. Susanna Hoffs was going to break out and be a movie star. And this is a teen 80s sex comedy, but there's no sex in it. And there's
no comedy?
Definitely not. There's a scene in it where Susanna Hoffs does an alluring striptease. That is about the only thing about the movie that has stayed with me. It is so bad. Joan Cusack is in it. The All-Nighter is a complete, utter stink bomb. I mean, really, people need to watch, like, Say Anything or even something like Revenge of the Nerds again. Don't watch
Better
The
Off
All-Nighter.
Dead. Come on.
Better Off Dead, One
just,
Crazy Summer.
Just One of the Guys.
Just One of the Guys, exactly. So many better choices than The All-Nighter. All-Nighter is a terrible film.
All right, then. Wow.
There you go.
You got to unleash a little bit on that segment, too. All
right. Got to, yeah, my pent-up rage over the All-Nighter.
Yes. Well, yeah, hey, I got it out over Benji the Hunted, so it's all
both
good.
From 1987, so hey.
That's crappy year.
Apparently, I like 1987. Leonard Part 6?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you're right. There are a lot of bad movies that came out that year. You're right.
Wow. All right, let's move on to a little bit of news. I guess I'm going to have the lion's share since I was for it. But
this is Dave's segment.
But Ethan wanted to bring up a trailer that I think is well worth bringing up.
Yeah, the Sucker Punch trailer.
Zack Snyder's Sucker Punch. So what is your impression of this trailer?
Be honest, I don't have... It's so short that I don't have much to say in it, about it, besides that the women in it are very attractive. But I'm looking forward to it.
It's what we expect from a Zack Snyder movie. Attractive, scantily clad women, lots of slow-mo,
tons
of CGI.
To be fair, the slow-mo didn't kick into like a minute and a half into the trailer.
Oh, okay.
Because I was waiting for it, and I was like, oh, there it is.
It looks
promising.
I'll bet you anything it's got the exact same twist ending as Brazil. I'll bet that's the exact same thing this thing is going to.
That's
going to
be cheap.
I'll bet that's where it's going to. I mean, it has a very similar story to Gothica, but I'll bet it's got the twist of Brazil. It's not going to be remotely original, but it does look like it could be fun.
Indeed. All right, and then, so my Comic-Con trip was kind of interesting because I actually went out there working. I only got one morning to really walk the floor and do whatever I wanted, but it was such a crazy good time because I went as an exhibitor. Actually, I worked for posterparty.com. They've got a ton of movie posters that are freaking awesome, by the way. I picked up, Steph, a foil map of Middle-Earth that's just gorgeous.
It's
pretty
sweet.
And you got brought back a
appreciate that. A Social Network poster. Thank you. Double-sided.
The theatrical double-sided. Yeah, it was pretty cool. But the cool thing is we got set up in like record time for any time that they've done it. Hmm. Or one of the faster times. So we had plenty of time to go walk the floor. And so I got to see a lot of cool stuff before the show even opened. And among those things I got to see beforehand was the Tron booth, the Tron Legacy booth. Hmm. They had like a 20-foot tall recognizer there, which was just so much fun. And they had the light cycle that they had at Flynn's Arcade last year, they had on the show floor. So that was incredibly cool looking, too, just to drool over.
Be able to see that, yeah.
And now be honest, Dave, were you the Hall H stabber?
No. I didn't even get to Hall H. The one morning I had off, I actually went to the Leverage panel over at the Hyatt. And, like, that's their one of their smaller ballrooms, and it's still the size of Starfest easily, like their main events room.
Now, if I remember a post on Facebook, you turned down an interview to go
No. I had put my name in to get interviews for Resident Evil and Takers, and it was becoming very clear I was going to have to choose before I heard anything one way or another what I was going to do. I'm like, you know what, screw it. I'm going to go to the Leverage panel because I love the show, and yes, Wheaton was there.
Nice.
And it, which turned out to be a very wise idea because I never got a call back on anything. So that worked out
good
quite
for
well.
You. No, yeah. That's good. That's a sure thing. So that's cool you did that.
Yeah. No,
Takers, you would have had to talk to Hayden Christensen. You know you don't want to talk to him. So
it'd be really. You know, I really try to be put a positive spin on someone's taking the time to talk to me, and that would have been difficult.
Well, I think I told you like when I was when I went with Josh and I had to sit next to Paul W.S. Anderson. Like,
no.
I like seriously, like you know, and I'm.
Why do your movies suck?
I consider myself a pretty mature adult, but I really had to like fight the urge to punch him. I really wanted to punch him so bad. I'm not even kidding. I'm not a violent guy. I haven't had a fight since like junior high, but I wanted to punch him so badly. And then like the last thing he said before he left the table was like, oh man, I can't wait. I start making death race next week. And I wanted to kill him. I really did. And his pregnant wife, Mila Jovovich, is sitting over there being so cute and sweet. And I'm just like, I want to murder this man. I really do.
Well, you heard about what happened at that panel. That panel was awful.
Disaster.
Like the 3D looked bad, and Mila Jovovich is like, I can't wait for y'all to see this scene. It's my favorite scene. And everyone just started booing the footage.
And apparently when the lights came up, she was like, wrong scene. Yeah
I was like, thinking of another scene. That one I'm thinking of is awesome. Kind of like how,
it'll still open because it has its fan base and legacy and the whole 3D hook, but anyway, I'm sorry. Back to Comic-Con.
One of the funnier lines was that when Robert Downey Jr. came out for the Avengers thing, he's like, no one stab anybody until I'm done talking. I loved hearing about that. But when I went over to the Leverage panel at like 10 o'clock, I got in line an hour beforehand. I got like halfway through. Like halfway through the hall being open, being full, I got in. So I got a great seat. I'm working on the audio of the panel. Actually, I captured it. Doesn't sound spectacular, but it sounds pretty good.
Still.
And it's an incredibly fun show. But like, I got there at 10 a.m., and the Hall H line, they said, I think was 8 hours long to try to get into Hall H.
8 hours long.
I'm just...
That's amazing.
No, I don't
care
that much.
You're lucky to get there like when the janitor's cleaning up. That's... Wow.
Yeah, so if you want to get in at 6 o'clock that night, come on over.
Wow.
That's just nuts.
Who's at the Leverage panel?
Almost the entire cast. You had Timothy Hutton. You had... Oh, goodness. Aldous... Crap, I forgot his name. He plays Hardison. Christian Kane was there, Beth Riesgraf, and Will Wheaton, as well as one of the creators was there as well.
Man,
and it was just
that's
a good
great.
Time. It was so cool. I feel bad I don't know Aldous's last name because he's like my favorite character on the show too. Dang it.
But you got to see Timothy Hutton. That's cool.
Yeah, he was a very cool guy too. And it was just a very fun, it was a light, fluffy panel, not a whole lot of in-depth stuff. But it was a good time. It was the first time most of them had been to Comic-Con.
And you saw Wheaton, your man.
Yes,
you saw Will Wheaton.
Yeah, I was like, hey, you're going to be around? And then I get in there and there's like 2,000-3,000 people. And I'm like, yeah, no one's hanging around for anything.
Did you make a Wesley Crusher joke or not?
No, I didn't get up to the mic. I was too busy trying to record the thing. And it only took like 4 or 5 questions. I could have walked up and just said, shut up, Wesley, but... He got some good zingers in there, and it was a good time.
Cool.
Let's see, what else did I see? I saw The Walking Dead. Oh my gosh, like this show is gonna be so freaking awesome. I need to come up with how I'm gonna do this contest. We'll do that we'll figure that out during the break. But AMC Image Comics had a booth that had essentially all the characters from the comic on one side and all the actors on the other side, and the casting looks perfect so far. And AMC actually had a booth that was a cutout of like a 50s house. And in the windows, they had like plasmas behind the windows, so you could see the zombies walking up to the window and all that stuff. It was really pretty cool. They also had a flat panel outside showing the trailer, which I posted on Facebook for the TV show. And it just looks... I read an interview with the creators who essentially walked into AMC and were like, look, it's cool you want to do a show, but I need to know what kind of restrictions you're going to put on us, because it's graphically violent. There's some very adult situations, lots of swearing. It's like, how are we going to get this on basic cable? What can we not do? You can't drop the F-bomb. That was the only limitation they were given. Otherwise,
that's it?
Go nuts.
Nice.
And you got Frank Darabont doing it, and it just the look is spot on to the comic. I just can't wait to see it. The booth itself, I didn't get into that part, was... It was carpeted. They had like a 50s TV in the corner. You had the dead wife on the floor mannequin. And on the couch, written in blood behind him on the wall, was, please forgive us. And he had his shotgun in his shoulder, and the back of his head was blown out.
Nice.
Like, it was intense and awesome.
Good for the whole family. Man.
Yes. It's definitely going to be fun for the whole family. I got to walk by and see the recreation of the Asgard throne room from Thor. It's pretty freaking impressive.
Man.
Yeah. Like, it looks just like from the trailer.
But you couldn't sit in the throne.
Actually, there were points when I went by you couldn't, but they were at some point letting people go up and sit in the throne and get their picture taken. And
wow.
Yeah. They had the helmet. They had different stuff in this sealed case different days. One day they had the three different helmets, Thor and Loki and Odin. Another one, they had Captain America's shield. They had all kinds of cool stuff. Yeah. Did you see the Thor trailer, Ethan?
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
I think that the stuff in Asgard looks kind of cool, but I think the stuff on Earth looks like Crocodile Dundee.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I wasn't going to say Crocodile Dundee, but the stuff in Asgard looks really interesting and fascinating. Once it goes to Earth, it's like that agent from Iron Man 1 and 2 who's going to be in the Avengers. I loved him in the first two Iron Man movies, and he got on my nerves to no end in this trailer. Essentially, the story is that Odin says, Thor, you damn hippie, go to Earth and get a job. You're being petulant. He kicks him out of Asgard. That part of it's actually pretty interesting, but my interest is more peaked than it was before. I'll say that much. And that's being pretty, that's a pretty big step for me, considering I had, didn't want anything to do with it a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
So, let's see, what else did I do? I saw the Tron Legacy trailer, which I'm sure you guys saw. Oh, I didn't get to Flynn's Arcade, which I'm really bummed, because apparently in the shady bar that was serving Coke Zero, I don't know why, but once in a while, the back of the bar wall would just, like, black out completely, and they'd show the trailer on this giant flat screen.
Oh, neat.
So, I wanted to bring up something about that trailer. I think Jeff Bridges, the whole de-aging thing, still looks pretty terrible.
It looks off, but it works in the context of the computer world, I think. I think if they'd tried to do it just, like, straight up, it would have been awful.
I don't see why they couldn't have just given him young age makeup. You know, I mean, for Pete's sake, just shave off the beard, dye his hair black. I would have been fine with that.
Yeah, I suppose.
Man, doing the whole, like, you know, X-Men The Last Stand thing to him.
But in the concept of it being essentially an avatar for a computer program, I think it works still.
I don't think it looks bad. It's supposed
to look off from how Kevin Flynn looks.
Okay, yeah, I don't mind it. I really don't. Especially when it's in the Tron world, I think it looks pretty cool. You know, but what the heck? It looks great. It looks great.
And Fox had a booth for the new Alien Anthology Blu-ray release. And they had probably a good 10-foot screen. Like, I think it was a 4K projection. And the transfers on these movies looks gorgeous. Like, I may rebuy Aliens again. I might buy the whole thing, just not in the Alien, like, the egg case. Which, seen up close, does look cool. It's just not, I'm not willing to blow $150 on it.
Wow.
But the cool thing was that they had 4 Weyland-Yutani sleep pods.
Nice.
That you actually get in, and you get a t-shirt, which I'm giving to Cody. I can say it now, because he won't hear it between now and when we go see that other movie. It actually acts as your headrest, so that's like how they kept it sanitary.
Yeah.
The thing closes, and you've got like this like 17 or 19 inch LCD panel, like 3 inches from your face, where they show a lot of the footage. And it's just like, hey, it's coming, it's gonna be cool. The sad thing was the resolution wasn't as good as the giant projector, so oh well. But it looks gorgeous. It's gonna be well worth picking up on HD.
Well, cool experience.
Yes. Let's see what else. I called out Chris Gore on accident. The independent filmmaker, founder of filmthreat.com. At the poster booth, we had, 160 some posters. You just say, I want number one ever, and we go grab it on top of the hundreds of other posters that were on boards. And we had to have a Twilight section, because you know what? Twilight sells. And
yeah.
I can tell you this firsthand, that dear God, does Twilight sell. And there was a Taylor Lautner black and white picture of him, like on a beach or something, you know, with abs showing and everything. My buddy Matt had the brilliant idea to color a post-it note black and cut out a mustache and stick it on him. So we started calling him Porn Stash Jacob. And everyone stopped by the booth just to look at it because it actually made him look better. It was kind of funny. But Chris Gore stopped to take a picture with his iPhone, and he just had a diamond mask on, like a superhero diamond mask. I'm like, Mr. Gore. He's like, well, I was trying to go incognito, but oh well. So we talked for a few minutes about official rejection, and yeah, that was a good time.
Nice.
Trying to think what else happened.
What else did you see that was like really impressive or like noteworthy?
You know, I'm trying to remember. You know, a lot of it, I tried to stay on the comic side of things. When I was walking out to the Leverage booth, it was weird. Bruce Timm was sitting at his art table doing a drawing for the guy. No one else was around him.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, I want to just go like shake the guy's hand, but, you know, didn't want to be a jerk. And I would have gotten a picture if it a drawing if it wasn't going to cost me like $200.
Did you get to meet Max Brooks?
I did. That was going to be next. I got to meet Max Brooks. He was doing a signing at the Avatar Press booth, so I bought the audiobook of World War Z, which is actually really impressive. The voice cast they got the Reiners, John Turturro, Henry Rollins. It's actually a really good voice cast. He was a cool guy. Got him to sign a copy of the Zombies Survival Guide for me. So that was a good time. Randomly, this is one of those guilty pleasure shows I like that Steph and I watched. It's called Ghost Adventures. It's like a really entertaining version of Ghost Hunters because Ghost Hunters is boring as crap and I just wanted to punch everyone on the screen. One of the guys from that show came by the booth and he didn't have his badge on, so we were worried that he lost it. And he showed us the badge. I'm like, dude, I love your show. So he brought one of the other guys over to say hi and they brought me down like a picture signed by all of them and stuff. And very cool guys. I think that's about it that I saw in that one morning and some weren't running around. Let's see. Yeah. A few shout-outs I got to do really quick. Actually, the Quantum Mechanics booth was awesome. They do a lot of these replica stuff for all your favorite TV shows. And Jim and Beth, like the sales manager, and I forget what Beth does, but they were incredibly cool people, just chatting us up. And they had the models for the new Little Damn Hero figures from Firefly. and they had to wash one and a river one. Just the prototypes. They weren't up for sale or anything. And they were so cool. Like, Wash has the Hawaiian shirt and two little dinosaurs, and they're supposed to be cute. And it worked. I ended up buying a Jane figure and a Dr. Horrible figure from them. And they had the communicators from Warehouse 13. They have, like, a little line of little fracking heroes, BSG related. They had the replica pistol of Mal's from Firefly. They had a replica coat. They had, like, just so much cool stuff. Nice. Oh, my gosh. And I guess I'll just get to the quick shout-outs real quick. I got to go to the Geeks On Meetup. That's my favorite podcast. If you don't listen to it, you absolutely should. Met up at a bar and had a good time. And met up with another guy, Clinton. Very cool guy, dude. If you're listening, it was a pleasure meeting you and hooking you up on posters and stuff. I don't want to say what he does because I don't know if that should be public. Oh, but you're not. But all the guys from Geeks On couldn't have been cooler. It was a good time. And got to meet David Willis from Short Pact, one of my favorite webcomics. Now favorite. I used to peruse it occasionally. Bought all of his books, and you read some of them.
And, yeah, really witty. Really good stuff.
Really funny stuff. You now have a reader for life, sir. Steve from over at the poster booth over at posterparty.com. Good guy. We talked much about movies, along with many other people. Who else have we got? Matt, my buddy Matt, who got me hooked up with this in the first place. Thank you, sir. It was a good time. We're going to try to have a better time next year if we get to go. And finally, we had a fan come up. You thought I was going to forget about you, didn't you, sir? Jack Gregson from the UK. He was doing a U.S. trip, and this was the culmination of his trip, was a trip to Comic-Con. And at the end of the trip, he did have to quote you, Ethan.
What did he say? What did he say?
He just walked up. He's like, you know, he visited the poster booth a few times. It's like, you know, I can't leave without doing this. Overrated. That was just for you.
Nice.
Yes. Jack Gregson, a.k.a. the British Val Kilmer, according to Anna Torv. So, yeah, that's a pretty entertaining story, too. He had a great sign he was walking around with. He had people walking around with free hugs, free high fives, whatever. He had a sign that said, was it, a single British straight interested? And apparently he got some good reactions from that. So, good nice. On you, sir. Yeah, it was just a heck of a good time. I can't wait to actually get the full attendee experience.
Yeah, so, we got to get you into Hall H.
Yeah, no
at
kidding.
Least for once. Like I
figured like Saturday morning I'd get up at like 6 and go camp out and try to get in. That's the day to go. But yeah.
Yeah, when I went, we had people basically holding a line, placed for us in line. We got in. So I went to Hall H twice, I think.
But, nice. Well, once you get in, you can get a bathroom pass for while you're in the panel.
Which is pretty sweet. But you know, like there's so much going on. There's so much. Oh, like even in the huge dealer room and everything. I mean, there's so many things to see.
The dealer room is probably
like, signings and all
it's probably
sorts
at least
stuff.
100 times literally the size of the Starfest dealer room.
Mm-hmm.
But I see what you mean by Starfest having its appeal because you get a lot more personal interaction.
Yeah, I feel like with Comic-Con, in my experience anyway, there's just so much to see. I feel like I'm like running around going, like,
it's
what
like
do
trying
I
to
do?
Cover Disneyland in a day on your first time.
Exactly. Like being able to do Disneyland in an hour, like, holy crap, which rides do I go on?
Yeah, what I really appreciated was like getting to meet Max Brooks, meeting David Willis from Short Pact. The guys from Penny Arcade were there, the guys from Red vs. Blue were there.
Nice.
And because they weren't the super big stuff, they weren't swamped. So you got more of a chance to actually interact with them and get to talk to them and get to know them, which really improves your experience as a fan and really connects you to that work a lot more, which, yeah, is just a good time. I mean, heck, I would have hung out in that Hyatt room because they had, like, several panels after that I'm like, dude, I'd love to see these. And, yeah.
Man, so. It really is, like, it's funny. Like, on one hand, everyone's like, a Comic-Con sold out. But, you know, there's so many of your favorite sorts of forms of entertainment there. There is
literally something for everybody.
Seriously, I mean, where else can you meet Ray Bradbury and Elvira and Simon Pegg and like all
and
these?
Tommy Wiseau.
And Tommy Wiseau.
Yes, he was
there.
I talked to people who got to talk to him. They're like, believe me, everything you've seen, he's totally like that in real life. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy good times. Should I talk about the most tasteless booth that I heard about there? First of all, across from us, there was a booth that was selling body pillows with anime characters on them. I didn't want to get a closer look to them. But apparently there was one guy who essentially deals in over 21 type games and Japanese sex games and stuff like that. And apparently his business card is a packet of tissues. I was like, well,
nice.
I was like, you know, I really think it's despicable, but at least you do know your audience. I'll give you that.
It's
much.
Class all the way, folks.
Totally, totally. But overall, there were a lot of cool dealers. There were so many statues I wanted to buy, but I wasn't going to spend $300 on them because I just don't have the place to put them. Yeah, but I spent too much anyway. Oh, and I got a Mystic Seer figure exclusive from Entertainment Earth. It's a bobblehead from Twilight Zone. very cool times.
Yeah, yes. It's one of my favorite episodes. Yeah, can you describe what it is exactly? It's the
William Shatner episode. It's like the little, like, you put a quarter in it and it's the devil head on top.
When he's at the diner and it basically tells you your future. Yeah, it's pretty wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was so much cool
And you
stuff.
Got that special Tron figure,
I got a
too.
Tron bear brick as well. That's the one Tron thing I could get, because... So I have one morning off. I go to the Tron booth to try to buy. They have a $5 little die-cast light cycle. Then for $40, they have like this 10-inch figure of Tron reaching up, trying to catch the disc from... Getting ready to take the disc from Alan 1 inside a Tron cabinet box. It's like the coolest thing. Like, it has the little joystick and everything. I get up there. I'm getting ready to get in line. Exhibitors, we're not selling to you today. I'm like, dude, this is my one morning. And they told me to piss off, essentially.
That's cool that you walked away with anything Tron, because the year that I went, the big deal was that they had, you know, the Indiana Jones reveal. So I walked away with an Indiana Jones 4 coin, you know, before they even had the title. So that's like one of my big prizes from Comic-Con.
You know, and I understood why they were taking away from the exhibitors, because after that happened, later that day, I was walking back to the booth, and there was an exhibitor who'd bought the figure and turned around and was trying to flip it for $95.
Mm.
I'm like, well, that's no wonder cool. You wouldn't want to sell it to us.
Yeah.
Because you're jerks out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Good time. If you have a chance, you need to go at least once in your lifetime. Period. You have to. I felt bad, Chris Stipp, sir, you were missed, but you had a child on the way. It's okay. There's other years. We'll hang out other years, I promise.
Not an acceptable excuse.
Oh, he was so bummed, dude. Yeah. Aww. It would have been cool to hang out and whatever, but maybe next year. Maybe next year, indeed. So, should we just take a break and then we'll come back and talk about Alfred Hitchcock?
Break.
Yeah, you and me both, sir. So,
can we actually, I hate to be a dick here. Can we just end the episode?
Yeah, we'll take a break and then come back and finish it up, and we'll do Hitchcock next week. Totally. So yeah, we'll be right back, and we'll all be dicks. It's all good. Because we have voicemails. Yeah, we need to. Yeah. Okay, we'll be back.
Sue Ellen Greenblatt is a real person, not an internet celebrity. So we've enlisted Billy Flynn and the Vicar to help her tell her story.
Geek Radio Daily gives me geeky news about movies, new DVD releases, even comics and gaming.
Geek Radio Daily makes me feel special.
Ah, yeah.
Womanly.
Yeah.
Okay, so the episodes are just 15 minutes, perfect for my commute or for just geeking out while I'm at the office.
Mm. All in one concise love package.
Ooh, the package, baby.
Uh-huh. And the best part is that it's a daily cast, so I'm always in the loop.
Sometimes I listen to it out of the bath, put on little outfits.
It makes me want to invite all my friends over to show how refreshed I feel.
A slumber party, baby.
What? That's not what I said.
Get out the
chocolate mousse.
Duct tape.
Oh, get out of here, you freaks.
Geek Radio Daily. One 15-minute podcast provides 15% of the USDA recommended daily allowance of geeky goodness. Subscribe through iTunes or visit geekradiodaily.com.
Hi, this is Ann Lockhart, and you're listening to Screen Geeks Radio.
So, yeah, sorry, kids, that we're not doing the Hitchcock thing, but yeah, we're like an hour into this, and so,
we'll do it next week. We will.
Yeah, we will. So let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this week.
Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell. Hopefully this is a comedy dream team, and that is The Other Guys, also starring Dwayne Johnson and Samuel L. Jackson. Looks like fun. Oh, sorry, Ava Mendez.
Isn't the proper hang on here. Where is it? Isn't his proper name Samuel L. Mother Ing Jackson?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Love that guy. Hope it's a good film. Step Up 3D.
I'm going to see this Tuesday.
It's funny because, like, tomorrow I'm going to go see The Other Guys. Dave is seeing Step Up 3D on Tuesday, so.
I think you're going to get the better end of the deal because I'm expecting, like, Break Into Electric Boogaloo.
I hope it's that good.
Oh, dude.
We're going to have a lot to talk about on Wednesday, that's for sure. That's going to be an interesting conversation.
Electric Boogaloo. That should be, you know, we should do a break in the episode. Just talk about the two movies.
I'm completely down for
just
that.
Just because, those. Yeah.
They were made back to back, so it's kind of like Lord of the Rings, where it's like, it's actually one movie. It's like one incredible film.
Because we have such diametrically opposed views of these films, we definitely need to do an episode.
Okay, yeah, let's do it. Okay. The break-in episode. Middleman, available in limited release, that stars Luke Wilson. That's coming out.
And Giovanni Ribisi.
So you know it's good.
And then Rob Reiner's first film since The Bucket List, Flipped, which looks like a pretty good film, a period piece. I think it takes place in the 1950s. Looks like a very sweet film. Hopefully it's good.
Cool.
And that's it.
All right. So, wow. Yeah. One potentially good. One, wow, that's going to be interesting. And then
we'll see.
Other good stuff. So, what's hitting DVD next week, sir?
It's finally happened. Max Headroom, one of the greatest cult 80s TV shows of all time, finally coming to DVD. Max Headroom.
I'm so proud of myself not for buying this at Comic-Con. They had it early, and I was like,
strength.
I didn't buy any movies.
Good for you.
That's a shock.
You should buy nothing at Comic-Con you can get anywhere else. That's why I like to come back with all
sorts
of posters.
I could have had it like 3 weeks
stuff.
Early, so,
yeah,
you know,
okay.
That would have been cool.
So Max Headroom, this is a good DVD. They've also got interviews with the cast and crew and a roundtable interview, a retrospect. I mean, this is going to be a really good pack. This.
Find out where Matt Frewer became famous.
That's right.
Yes.
Not Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
No.
Steve Carell and Tina Fey in Date Night. It's supposed to be really good. I did not see this movie, but I heard it was very good.
Date okay.
I'll watch it on the plane on Monday.
Oh, there you go.
There
definitely
you are.
Definitely an airplane movie. Chris Rock, Danny Glover, and a lot of other people in Death at a Funeral, the remake.
Yeah.
Heard very mixed things about that one. Horror High, not one of the great classics of the horror genre, and yet it's celebrating its 25th anniversary. 35th anniversary edition of Horror High. I've seen Return of Horror High, which stars George Clooney, and I could recommend that as a guilty pleasure, but yeah, Horror High. From the creators of Fireproof, a movie called Letters to God. I'm not sure what that address would be, but Letters to God, that's coming out. It was in theaters for exactly 1 week here. And you know, if a film from the producers and director of Fireproof doesn't do well in Colorado Springs, it's probably not that good.
Oh, you went there.
Well, let's face it. If it's at least halfway decent, it'll play for months here.
It doesn't have to even be halfway decent.
Exactly. But you know, if it doesn't even last more than 2 weeks in Colorado Springs, then it can't be that good. So
compared to the masterpiece,
that's right.
That is
Louie Bluey, available on Criterion. This is interesting. You tell me about this. Is the first film Terry Swigoff ever did before he did Crumb?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like an interesting documentary.
Yeah. And speaking of which, Crumb is also available on Blu-ray.
Criterion. Both of these are Criterion.
Criterion Blu-ray. Yeah. So I'm glad that Criterion's getting on the Swigoff bandwagon. I wonder if they're going to re-release Art School Confidential.
I don't know.
Or Bad Santa. I don't know. And then also available on Blu-ray, Vacation, which is funny. I just watched that last night. I love this film. National Lampoon's Vacation, one of Chevy Chase's best, if not his best, vehicle. European Vacation, not quite as good, but not bad. Very good film by Peter Bogdanovich, What's Up, Doc? Great slapstick farce with Ryan O'Neal and, yes, Barbara Streisand, who's actually good in it. And crap title of the week for this week, a film that is now celebrating its 20th anniversary. Maybe that's why they're re-releasing it, even though this DVD has no extras at all to speak of. Brian De Palma's The Bonfire of the Vanities. I've got such a bone to pick with this movie. I mean, it's often a movie that's referred to as one of the worst films of the 90s. It is one of the biggest box office flops of all time, despite the fact that it stars Tom Hanks, Bruce Willis, Morgan Freeman, Melanie Griffith. This was the film based on the legendary Tom Wolfe novel, by the way, my favorite novel. This movie took a black, dark story and turned into a complete slapstick farce. It's not the worst film De Palma's ever made, actually. And come to think of it, there's a lot of things about it that are very interesting. It has this great opening shot that goes on for about maybe like 7 minutes long. It's this great long take. It's definitely an interesting disaster, but it is a disaster. It is a stink bomb turkey of a movie. It has one of the worst endings I think you'll ever see for a movie about a white guy who hits a black guy with his car, and then the black judge, played by Morgan Freeman, gives this inspirational speech, which belongs in no movie, definitely not this one. It is a disaster of a film, but you know, it might be worth looking at again. So that's it.
You can tell next week is going to be weak when the Girls Gone Wild movie starts showing up on the fifth page of Amazon. Usually it's like page 10 for me, and I was like, wow, they're showing up there already. Okay.
Didn't you say there was also one called like Graphic Horror Sex Violence or something?
Something like that. I was just like,
it's
wow.
Like that was the title. Like, no, I know what's in
what
it, but what's it?
What you get.
Dave's like, no, that's the name. That's the title.
Now, you brought up Criterion. I totally forgot the Barnes & Noble sales getting ready to end. Did you end up picking up anything?
Mm, no, I didn't. I couldn't pick one. Yeah. I couldn't. I was looking at Paris, Texas, but I kept going to other ones. I'm like, I don't know.
I ended up grabbing Ride with the Devil, which I haven't seen yet.
Good film.
The M Blu-ray has the English language version of M, which I didn't even know existed until I read about it.
Me neither. That's great.
They found it in 2005. I'm like, you know what? That's worth the upgrade.
Yeah.
And then I got Stagecoach. So looking forward to watching that too. Yes. You know, shall we move on to some listener mail?
Yes. Because
we have mail.
We have listeners. Yay.
Yay. And we have mail. I'll just read the one first, and then we'll get into the voicemails.
Okay.
All right. Dave, Barry, and Ethan, let me be one of the first to chime in and say that I like the experiment with the director series. Now onto the series itself. Interesting choices for the famous Hitchcock films. I noticed they all seem to stem from the 60s when Hitchcock seemed to be in a real stride, delivering one classic after another. It's hard to pin down my favorite from that period. It sometimes comes down to which one I've seen last. However, there's a slight edge to North by Northwest. In many ways, I see this film as one of the precursors to the modern summer action movie. Though modern studios, directors, and screenwriters could take a lesson from it. It shows that what on the surface could be a popcorn summer action blockbuster can still have a good story, compelling characters, and artistic merit. Like Inception, perhaps, I'm thinking. That definitely would qualify as all of those things.
I agree.
Well, I haven't seen Inception. See, this is why I shouldn't put in personal stuff beforehand. I feel like Christopher Nolan may be the best heir for this current system. Like Hitchcock, Nolan has earned the trust and respect of his audience, and it seems they will follow whatever project he wants to turn his attention to next. I was intrigued that among the more recognized films by Hitchcock, you didn't pick Strangers on a Train. We'll be talking about that next week, actually.
Well, yeah.
Mayhaps it will be part of the next episode. That said, I still feel it ranks up there with among Vertigo and Rear Window as one of the true masterpieces Hitchcock directed. I agree wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. But once again, we'll talk about it next week. Another film you guys may or may not mention is Mr. and Mrs. Smith. We are so talking about that movie next week. I checked it out on a whim and from my library a few years ago, and while it's not a great film, it's still enjoyable. It also shows how Hitchcock was willing to try something different from time to time, and for the most part, pull it off. Well, that's about it for now. I'm sure I'll have more thoughts when the next episode airs, and may write back then. Or maybe I could call that wacky voicemail line. Crap, I don't have it ready right now. Either way, keep up the good work, Michael H. Thank you, Michael, very
much
for that.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate that. Yeah, we'll keep going. And no, you're right, North by Northwest is classic.
Yes. So, yes, thank you very much, sir. Let's go ahead and move on to our first voicemail. And, you know, I keep wanting to say who's calling, but they're going to tell us anyway, so I'm just going to play it.
Greetings, Screen Geeks. It's Tommy, a.k.a. D. Quarterman on Twitter.
See?
Just calling to say, first off, I know I've said it before, but I'm going to say it again. I still think you guys are one of the best podcasts I listen to. I just do. A few things. One, the new format. I like it either way, honestly. You know, I say mix it up a little. You know, maybe, you know, the highs, the lows, perhaps this is the pinnacle of whatever. Either way, you know, the individual film or the director's best and not as well known, either way. And I happened to catch a midnight showing of The Last Airbender. Being a fan of the show, highly, highly disappointed. It was so mashed together. It felt like a clip show of most of the season minus the last hour, which was like the last two episodes. It just, and not to mention the fact in the show, names were pronounced in a certain way, and then they just pronounced things completely different in the movie. And there's no real explanation for it. I mean, they're not speaking a language different, or not speaking any sort of a native language, but they just suddenly, it's the character names are pronounced completely differently, and that just one of many, just complete disappointment in Last Airbender. I had such high hopes. That's really it. Keep up the great work. Bye.
Thank you, sir. You know, there is a reason why everything was pronounced differently. It's because Shyamalan's like, you know what, you're pronouncing this wrong. I'm going to change it because I know all.
Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate the kind words. And I'll tell you what, I've been thinking about seeing Last Airbender. I don't even know if I'm going to see it at the Dollar Theater at this point. I do want to see it.
Why would you? Yeah.
But, you know, our Dollar Theater, it does take a bit of a drive to get there, and it's not in the best part of town. So it is something of a risk to see a cheap movie in this town.
It is kind of in the I'm going to get shot part of town. Indeed.
So, yeah, we actually do have one of those in Colorado Springs. It's a very
interesting
town.
We've got a couple. Yeah. We do. Yeah. But, you know, I'm kind of toying with still playing around with the format. We might just even do a more well-known, just rattle off movies and talk about them, and lesser-known and let it go at that. Because the lesser-known films of Hitchcock next week, is not going to be subjected to just four films. I think it's going to be a lot broader.
You know, it's funny though, Dave. We've been talking about our new format. We're still doing the same thing. We're like, we've been doing the same series now for like forever.
It's because I was gone for 2 weeks.
I know, it's just funny. It's like, new format. No, it's not. We're still like, we're taking forever to get through one series.
That's true. It's still going to take 3 episodes to get through the one series. This is fair enough, I suppose.
We have not changed a lick.
Yeah, well, yeah, we cover more content in an episode. We'll put
that
way.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's move on to our last voicemail, and we will move on from there. Oh, and we have the contest to get to. So.
And I got
to
mention the festival that's coming
up. Oh, yes. So, yeah, we got plenty. Wow.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Hello, Screen Geeks. How the hell have you been? So, yeah, it's been a while. I've been crazy busy, school and work and doing that podcast thing. But we're not here to talk about me. We're here to talk about you. And the fact that, yes, everybody should see the movie White Dog. I saw this. I want to say it was on the movie channel, like when I was in, I don't know, 8th or 9th grade or something. It's a random movie, Christy McNichol, Paul Winfield. What? Insane. It's an insane movie. It is a really interesting movie that a lot of people dismiss because the name is called White Dog. Oh, look, it's a white dog that doesn't like black people. But no, it's a really, really good movie. Something I think, yeah, check it out. It's no Crippled Masters. Everyone, again, should see Crippled Masters. In fact, you should have the White Dog Crippled Masters double feature. I'd really, really, really like to see that. Yeah. Oh, by the way, Barry, thanks for suggesting In the Heat of the Night for that paper. That was like, three classes ago. But yeah, I got like a 92 on that. Good job. Well done. And hey, I have a show suggestion for you. I would like to see you discuss sequels. Wait for it. Those strange sequels that never really had a chance, but were daring original but bad sequels. For instance, like The Two Jakes. You know, they got back Nicholson, and, you know, they wanted to have that Chinatown feel, but it didn't. And, you know, like, I don't know, The Sting 2, Electric Boogaloo, anyone? Yeah, you know, something like that. I want those weird, strange sequels that are, you know, I want to see you discuss that. Lastly, yes, Psycho. In my lifetime, I have watched the movie Psycho with 2 different people that had no idea how it actually ended. As a kid, being a horror movie fan, I long knew the secret of Psycho before I ever saw it, but it was still amazing when I saw it. Like you, Psycho 2 was fantastic, except, of course, for the obvious, slasher film moment at the end with the knife, the mouth, you know what I'm saying. Psycho 3, I loved what Perkins did with some of his camera shots, you know, just that playing, that feel, what I like to call the Highlander scene change moments. I thought that was really interesting. Would like to have had a better script. It's not a bad movie, but it's not as good a sequel as Psycho 2. And then the fourth one, well, it was just really interesting to see Henry Thomas again. And since I didn't see him again until 11/14, that was a long time, and we definitely missed him. That Vince Vaughn thing? Yeah, that sucks. So keep up the fantastic work. Work on that idea, that strange sequel thing. There's an idea there somewhere. I know there is. Maybe you could have a really talented, cool guest host. I won't name names, but I'll point. And I know it's audio, so you can't see me. Later.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn.
Thank you. Yeah, I let's do it, by all means.
White Dog is in my Netflix queue as well.
Man, them's fighting words. I love The Two Jakes. That's one of my favorite movies, and that's probably one of my favorite Jack Nicholson films. I love that film. I think it's a masterpiece, but I'd love to talk. I think that's a great idea. We can talk about stuff like Return to Oz and Speed 2 Cruise Control, and
that's probably the one way to actually finally watch it.
Yeah.
The Evening Star.
The Evening Star, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
Wow, go for the obscure sequels. That could be interesting.
I saw Evening Star the day it came out, and I gotta say, I didn't think it was that bad.
Okay.
It's no Terms of Endearment, but it's not that bad.
Fair enough. All right. Well, if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can. You can give us a call at 719-358-2675. Yes, that is 719-358-BORK. I still haven't got the drop yet, but I'll get it at some point. If we've got a little bit of a contest coming up. You can also email us all at podcast, Ethan, Barry, Dave, all at screengeeks.com. But I told you about the Walking Dead banner that they had up at the Image Comics booth. They had a thing going at the AMC booth where you could get your pictures, get yourself zombified for a scene from it. I put it on my Facebook just because. But I came back later, and if you went through it again, they gave you an actual poster that was a smaller version of that banner. And honestly, I have no place to put this banner. So I've discovered, honestly, like like the Comic-Con is the king of swag in that shit we all get kind of way, in that you've got so much cool stuff but nowhere to put it. So next year I'm going to grab as much of it as I can to give away. So, do you want a banner of The Walking Dead? I know you do. If you do, it's really easy. There's no trivia. I'm just going to pick a name at random. Email us, podcast@screengeeks.com will work just fine, with your favorite zombie story, whether it be a comic, a book, a movie, whatever it is, and why. If you want to leave us a voicemail with it, that works too. Just give us a call, 719-358-2675. And you have something to talk about as well, sir.
I do. Last and in no way least, this weekend, August 6th through the 8th, in North Bend, Washington, is the Twin Peaks Festival. If those of you who are peak freaks, those of you who love David Lynch, those of you who love anything involved with the world of Twin Peaks or anything that David Lynch has done, you need to go to this thing. It's an annual festival. We had a pleasure of interviewing Jared Lyon, one of the heads of the fest, who's overseeing it. This year, among the attendees at the fest, Jennifer Lynch, the director of Surveillance and Boxing Helena. She also wrote The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer. Kimmy Robertson, Charlotte Stewart, who was not only a regular in Twin Peaks, but also the star of Eraserhead, and many other celebrities and actors and actresses and performers who are in the film. This is this wonderful, wonderful festival they do every year in Washington, where they've got a bus tour where they take you all to all the filming sites where they shot the film in Snoqualmie Valley. There's the Pine Weasel Scavenger Hunt. If you've seen the series, you know what that's about. They've got a Twin Peaks library with everything Peaks freaks are into. They've got bottomless coffee, cherry pie, and damn good coffee for everybody. They're showing the the pilot of Twin Peaks at the at a local museum. This is just a really, really awesome, cool festival. We definitely want to get behind. It's very, very, just more like a really cool family reunion, just really, really laid back. You could just walk up to the celebrities and just chat with them and tell them how much you love their work and what they've done. So this is a really cool.
I was gonna say,
yep.
Sorry, if you own the gold box thing, they have a special feature dedicated to it. On
yep.
It, so.
Yeah, exactly. And that'll totally give you an idea what you're in for. So, no, this is a really special thing. Unfortunately, I'm not able to make it this year, which ticks me off because it's the 20th anniversary of Twin Peaks. I really wanted to be there, but I can't. But I'll definitely be going in future years. If you're interested, listeners, please go to TwinPeaksFest.com. TwinPeaksFest.com.
I'll put it in the show notes. We've also got an interview coming up.
We have an interview
like
with Jared Lyon, which we're going to put up, which is a wonderful interview he granted us. Thank you so much again, Jared, for doing that. This is August 6th through the 8th in North Bend, Washington. If you're in the neighborhood, if you can make it, definitely make it. It is worth the trip. It is worth the money. Check it out, the Twin Peaks Festival.
And one last thing I'll bring up, August 27th and 28th, for all the Colorado geeks. The Tivoli is showing, they're getting a run of Best Worst Movie, and then Keith Garcia, I love this guy, he's an awesome man. He is programming, as part of their Watching Hour series, that weekend, Troll 2. So you can do a double feature of Best Worst Movie and Troll 2. I'm going to put together a Facebook like group of it, like an event, and invite people. So like, join us on the Facebook group at Screen Geeks Radio, and I'll put more info in there. But that's going to be a good time. I can't wait for that. Any parting words from you, Ethan?
Not really.
Okay, fair enough. It's all good. It's not like it's a long episode or anything. Actually, it's not that long because we skipped the Hitchcock part, which we'll do next week.
We will. We promise, listeners, we will.
Yes, because I don't think there's any conventions I'm going to randomly run off to. So, yeah. awesome time.
You going to go to the Twin Peaks Festival?
No. I have like 7 days off for the rest of the year, so I need to conserve my time off. But until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Jeremy Davies' biggest fan.
There's nothing to follow that up with, really, is there?